Good morning, Louise.
Good morning, Tracy.
And it's actually Louise today.
Yes.
Last week we had emergency guest Trevor, and he was awesome, but I missed you.
That's right. Well, thank you. But we know how we were winging it.
Well, you know, winging
it happens.
I know winging it is a good thing sometimes. It changes up your neurons and, you know, gives you a different kind of energy. So, yeah, it's totally valid.
And it reminds you that there's always another way.
There is always another way.
There's got to be another way.
Yeah, and we have to just be open, right? Like, I think a lot of people get very set in their schedule and the structure and the system that they're accustomed to.
Yes.
Because there's safety in it. But we got to remember that when those things are, like, when things are tossed up in the air and it lies randomly, you got to kind of throw yourself in and enjoy the process of figuring it out as you go.
Enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in a way, that leads into our topic.
Yes, our topic today is...
Fake it till you make it.
That's right. I wonder who coined that phrase.
I don't know, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
And the even the word fake it kind of has some negative connotations, right? Because we have, you know, we don't look kindly on people who are pretending to be people they're not.
Yes.
And we don't like it when people lie about stuff, about qualifications and things like that. So the whole concept
of... It's not lie until you make it.
Yeah. No, it's not quite... We do have a different, so in the way that's being used here, it's more of a confidence boosting process till you make it. That's more what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's sort of an invitation to try.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could be try it till you make it, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah.
But there's also the exterior view of things turns out has way more of effect of our interior processes than we imagined. And so that's why when you fake it, sometimes you become it.
Yes. Manifest destiny.
Yeah. Ooh,
exciting.
That's a whole, you know, we could, there's scientific proof about manifest destiny.
Is that right?
Well, I hear that there's more scientific studies being done about it because they actually can't explain it away anymore.
No.
They have to think, okay, if this placebo controlled test didn't show us how it didn't work and it still seems to be working, then we got to figure out ways of testing things. So.
And I mean, it's not just career or skills. It's also a very important concept in terms of overcoming illness, mental illness, addiction, right? It's sort of built into those systems. Imagine yourself this way.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's as simple as that.
Yes.
It's not easy to do.
No.
But it is a very clear path if you're capable of doing it. Okay. So let's talk about what it is.
And so one of the reasons we're talking about this is, as you say, we get stuck in routine and sometimes you have to break routine to find new ways of doing things. And that's important in terms of innovation and getting better at what we do and you know, the dreaded, but we've always done it that way.
Yeah.
That's a life sentence, man.
It is.
Yeah. So, I mean, structures are important and process is important. There's no doubt about it. But if you know the rules, then you can break the rules.
Yeah.
That's the way I sort of think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And where it's important to remember that it's okay to not know how to do things.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people are frozen in, well, they don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Or I've never done that before. Or I won't do that because they always do that. You know, like in my house, say we have a little mouse problem, which we do because it's cold and the mice are coming in. Well, I don't set traps. And I certainly don't retrieve them if they're successful in their mission. But then I thought, why can't I do that? I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no.
And if you're forced to do that, right?
Yes.
If the mouse trap emptier was away for a few days, and you kind of had no choice, you would do it.
I would.
And probably discover it's way easier than you thought.
Yes. I think, sort of jumping randomly from topic to topic, but I feel like I'm more comfortable in some areas of my life faking it till I make it than others.
Yeah.
Right? And so for me, when I'm in the kitchen, I'll try just about anything. Because, like, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Yeah. Well, you lose a few ingredients.
Yeah. But it teaches you to, like, who knew? I didn't know I could make that.
Okay, I know what that is, though.
What is that?
You have confidence in the kitchen.
Yes.
Because you've already had success there. Right? So, I think that's one of the things that people aren't making the leap in, is choosing to have confidence.
Yes.
So if you've built confidence because you've had years in the kitchen or years at a certain job, of course, it's natural. We think, yeah, I got this. I'm good. I know what I'm doing. Everything's fine.
Or people.
But all the other areas where we haven't built up that confidence, that's where we need to think about other ways of getting things done.
Yeah. And sometimes the way we approach trying to do something new is we'll take a course, which is so important.
Yeah.
So for example, you could take a cooking course, or you could take a painting class, or, you know, and then you can say, well, I took a course.
Yeah.
Therefore you give yourself permission to, to try.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at this paint and sip thing happening right now.
Yeah.
It's on fire. And I think that's because people will say, well, I've always wanted to be a painter.
Yeah.
Well, we all have these romantic notions of being an artist. It's a lot less romantic than you might think. And yet there's workshops going on the paint and sip tour. And it's so lovely to see people who wouldn't normally go to the trouble of buying a canvas and buying a paint. And what kind of paint do I buy? What kind of paintbrush do I buy?
Yeah.
And so when it's packaged in a way that's sort of accessible and
confidence.
Confidence. Yeah. Then they have the confidence. Yeah. Who knows? We might be spawning all kinds of new.
I know.
It's incubation. Exciting.
Incubation.
See, a really good incubation.
Yeah, yeah. A really good artistic community has all levels of participation like that.
Yes.
And those are like incubators.
Yes.
All of those kinds of events. And in fact, I kind of wish that all of that sort of stuff was happening close to the gallery, because that really makes a thriving cultural district. You got the theater, like the two theaters, the live theater and the projected theater, and then the gallery, all right there within a half a block.
Yes.
So wouldn't it make sense to have more of the, you know, other kinds of incubator galleries and a commercial gallery and a, you know, and a project space, a maker space, everything all within that area.
And I mean, I think the early conditions are.
I hope so.
Yes, because the maker space study is going ahead.
Yeah.
Economic development and community futures have funded that. And these workshops just keep popping up. And, and so culture, real culture, I think, bubbles from the ground up.
Yeah.
So you can't sort of have a body at the top going, thou shalt build a makerspace.
Thou shalt culture.
You're right. Yeah. Please. Culture.
Except that good planning can make it like centralize things. And that's where successful cities have, where that planning has come into play and actually built cultural vibrancy, because they cluster the cultural activities together and then it makes it vibrant. Maybe people want to live in those neighborhoods.
Totally.
And then,
and so the
good stuff happens.
I mean, I guess it's where our appetite, we're always hungry to learn more.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're uncomfortable going into traditional establishments. Like if you've never painted before, you might not go to a paint and draw or a sketch club meeting in the basement of the gallery.
Right.
You might not.
Yeah. Well,
but you might go to, you know, one that's set up at the market or or at a store or at a friend's house.
Or a winery.
Yes. So, and so I think that's important to kind of weave in. What else would we like to do?
Yeah.
Right?
Because you shouldn't have to do all of those structured things within the structured, you know, the brick and mortar places where those things are designed for things. Like that's, this is the time of innovation.
That's
and innovation of space is absolutely part of it.
And creative place making and the creative economy strategy that the government has and the cultural master plan task force that we're working on. So I feel like there's a, as I say, the fake it till we make it is starting to produce, right?
Yeah. We're getting to, and you know, Salmon Arm is a fairly small city when you look at some of the bigger cultural districts in Canada and larger Canadian cities.
Compare ourselves to even a Kelowna or a Kamloops. That's beyond our.
But if we don't plan now, then we're not, you know, then we won't have those things in place by the time we get to be and we probably will get to be a Kelowna, Kamloops, or at least a Penticton size, right?
Yeah.
Like we're growing.
We are.
So let's make sure
we'll see. The StatsCan numbers from the census come out in February. So that'll be like Christmas too.
Well, it feels like a lot of trees are getting knocked down for housing. So we certainly must be growing.
It's, I know, residential right now is incredible.
Yeah.
How many new units are coming online?
Yeah. Although it is really good to see. I mean, I know that there's been some major forestry leveling up in, the upper areas of Salmon Arm. But it is really good to see some infill going on down in the more downtown core area. Yeah. That's fantastic.
It's the reason for my existence. Yeah. Rezoning from R1 to R8.
Yeah.
Like yesterday alone at the council meeting, three applications for R8.
Wow.
And R8 is secondary suite.
Yeah.
So and legal secondary suites, right?
Yeah. Which are density,
property built. Yeah, and it
vibrancy,
saves
and it saves farmland.
And it saves farmland.
Yeah, yeah.
And
saves
forests
and saves
resources and roads. And we can't just keep spreading out.
And we're building neighborhoods. Like that's one thing that in a lot of cities where people have found that there's disconnect in the neighborhoods is because of the distance between houses. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know your neighbors, you're not building community. If you're not building community, you're not raising your children according to that, that feeling that you participate in a big, something larger than your family.
Yes.
And so if we're not building that into our children now,
yeah.
Why are they ever going to feel like
the fabric of connection.
Yeah. Like, yeah. How are they going to feel like their community is important? How are they ever going to be involved with good planning, good resource management, good anything? Because if it's only about themselves and their family, you know, then that's how we get trapped in that horrible me.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of place.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if you live in the suburbs, your car's in your garage, you get in your car. You open the garage door. Well, you open the garage door. Then you turn on your car.
Yeah.
Then you go to your work, right? So you rob yourself of all those interactions, even things like, should I have a garage or shouldn't I have a garage? Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't have a garage, you see your neighbors way more.
Yeah.
Trust me. Most of my neighbors have seen me in my pajamas, right? Whereas if I lived in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Or I was in an apartment, I took the elevator down to the underground parking and got in my car. So you sort of... in your cocoon, like, the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I think in smaller communities, you know, we have to be smart about how we do it.
Yeah. So, and different kinds of housing within the small area.
Yes.
Can't all be apartments or be detached houses.
No.
You have to mix it up.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some people might not like that, right? Some people think design-wise, that's not right. Big apartment building next to a house, next to a little tiny house, next to a big house. It doesn't feel right somehow.
Yeah,
but that's the kind of diversity that it makes that neighborhoods great.
That we need so we can test out ideas on each other.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Whereas if we all live in... Identicalville. You know, the first time my boys drove through a suburb, they said, "Mommy, how do you know which one is yours?"
Exactly.
Because in Canoe, no two houses look alike, right?
Yeah.
How do you know which one is yours?
It's true.
Anyway, from there to fake it till you make it, it really is important to...
We really kind
of... create a community where people can test ideas.
Yes.
Right? Like, what would you think about this? Or what would you think about that?
It's like making an environment by which you can leave your structure and your schedule and your everything.
Yeah. So the ecosystem has to welcome.
Yeah. I think we just...
experimentation.
Yeah. We're already at that break time.
Yeah.
So, and we diverged a little bit from our topic, but that's okay.
But it's all tied together.
Yeah. So, we'll just come back. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the ways that decision-making is affected by our faking it till you're making it concepts and some of the big decision-making that's going on in our global society right now, which is a bit overwhelming and sometimes scary. Today on Artscape, we're faking it till we make it.
That's right. Let's talk as if we know what we're talking
about. Yeah. And
that's the next one. It's called Talk As If.
Yeah. Yes. And that's a really important part of faking it till you make it is speaking as though you know what you're talking about. So we do that all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Except I do research. Like, mostly it's the night before, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. At least I come into a situation with some knowledge. Mm-hmm. But in a conversation... you diverge. It's just natural, right?
But,
and that's exactly what we're doing here. We're just having a conversation.
No. And if you think about when a child is born, no child is born knowing how to talk and walk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're trying, pretending. And so the brain power it takes to learn how to walk and talk is far greater than anything you do in your adult life.
Yeah.
Right? So we're hardwired to try stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so where we get in trouble is we think, I officially know it all.
Right? I'm good. I know everything.
I know everything. Or I know everything I need to know.
And there's a dangerous time of our lives,
yeah.
right? Those teenager, early 20s.
Oh, I know they know everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they don't need...
If you need to know anything, just ask my 14-year-old. He'll tell you.
So it's kind of a funny phase when you think about it, because mm-hmm. that is the time when they're the spongiest. Mm-hmm. They've got the ability to learn from all of these experts that are in their lives, and they're grown up enough to be able to, you know, actually participate in some of these great opportunities. And yet they think, I don't need that. I got it.
I wonder why that is. I think it might be because they're, when you're a teenager, your whole brain is rewiring.
Yeah.
And when you're expecting a child, your whole brain rewires. Hmm. It's the times in your life where... you know, because a lot of times you can be like a nightmare teenager and then a perfectly reasonable, capable, delightful adult, mm-hmm. right? Or not, but fingers crossed. Absolutely. Yeah. I see it all the time. Like, mm-hmm. oh, when you were a teenager, you were kind of a handful. But yeah. look at you now, responsible grown up. So maybe they're protecting their brains from like too much information. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just speculating here.
Yeah. No, I think it's an important scientific thing. We're faking it. Okay.
Yeah. And it's okay. That's how we learn to do things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about imposter syndrome.
Yeah. So this concept of the imposter syndrome, I came across it a couple of years ago. It was an article in the New York Times on Facebook. And I started reading it and my palms started to get sweaty. I'm like, oh my God, I have imposter syndrome. Right?
Is it like when you diagnose yourself with everything you
yes,
read about?
Yes, I know. Okay. Don't ever do that. Yeah. So it is a syndrome, but ironically, real imposters don't have imposter syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
Only
people who actually know what they're doing.
Yes. Have imposter syndrome. And it's across all careers, all fields, all professions, all personality types, right? Yeah. And I think it just keeps us humble. Like, do I really know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So it is the feeling that you are not as good as everyone thinks you are.
Yes.
You're not as smart, not as capable, not as knowledgeable as everyone believes you to be. That's the thought.
And someone's going to find you out.
Right.
Right?
Somebody's going to figure it out one day and that's it.
Yeah, one of these days. Yeah. And you hear famous people talk about this all the time, artists and musicians and celebrities, that one of these days someone's going to find me out. But apparently it's very prevalent in what's called the high achiever types. Mm-hmm. So
it's basically the more you do know, the more you think, oh God, somebody's going to figure it out.
I know. Well, yeah. I mean, if you're doing it right, what you learn is all you ever learn is how little you know.
Yeah.
Right? So as long as you're still hungry for...
But then the way to fight imposter syndrome is to basically understand that you don't know everything and that you're always willing to learn and to be vocal about that.
Yes.
To make sure that people around you know that.
Yeah.
That I'm not walking around thinking I know everything. I'm excited to be here because I've got, you know, whatever, 20 years experience in this field, but I'm always learning.
Yes.
So I've always got, I want collaboration. I want input because I love the learning.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way to fight imposter syndrome.
And to acknowledge the, hey, nobody knows everything. And if someone tells you they do know everything, you should maybe be a little bit.
Yeah.
Cautious.
Yeah.
Right? Because the real imposters are the scary ones.
Yeah. So they don't get that feeling.
No.
They're not worried at all about somebody finding them out.
No.
Such an interesting.
Because they don't care.
What crazy beings we are.
It's true. We're very odd creatures.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of imposters, or I like to call them posers, but.
Yeah.
Especially in U.S. politics right now. But they have no idea.
Yeah.
They really have no idea.
Yeah.
Right?
They think they're right.
Right?
They
Which is the scariest. Yeah. At least if you have an idea that you have no idea, you're probably better off than the opposite.
Yeah.
Which is having no idea that you have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You sound like George Bush. Speaking of American politics.
Yeah. We know what we don't.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The known knowns and the unknown knowns and the unknown unknowns. Yeah. Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, my gosh.
And yet sometimes we look for leaders who are very assertive.
And confident,
right?
Yeah. And we think that they're right because they're confident.
Yes.
That's the worst part is we just absorb it. We're like, okay. I must know what he's talking about.
He said it.
Yeah. He said it on TV.
On TV. Like, I heard it.
In loud. Yeah.
I read it on Google.
IRL.
Yes. but the truth is it all comes down to how we make decisions, really. Mm-hmm. This is about decision making.
Yes.
And sometimes we make decisions from our gut, from our intuition. And that's a super powerful way to make decisions.
And but it's valid. And
yes.
It's hard. And we can't, I think that one of the things that if you had to explain to somebody how you came to a decision and you said, I used my gut, mm-hmm. that's, you know, people are afraid to say that mm-hmm. because that's not seen as a valid
yeah.
reason.
And yet your subconscious or your unconscious mind works like at 3 million times the rate of your conscious mind.
Wow.
It's mind blowing.
Yeah.
So you don't even know what's going on in there. Yeah. But so, I mean, we've talked briefly about this before, but that's the reason you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go, aha, that was that guy's name.
Yeah.
Or that was that movie I was trying to remember.
Because yeah, your subconscious has been working on
it
the whole time.
Yeah, it's working on it the whole time.
Yeah.
Right? Processing.
Yeah. And you can assign projects for your subconscious to work on.
Yes.
You can go to sleep literally saying,
say, okay, huh, can we just
I can't
get
think
this
of that thing.
Sort it out.
Yeah. But I want to solve that problem by tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. And so we actually never forget anything. Everything is permanently recorded. It's just where do we store it and how hard is it to retrieve stored item.
Right. Well, because the storage isn't actually storage, it's pathways. Mm-hmm. And so your pathways get triggered by other pathways, mm-hmm. right? Because the pathway might still be there, but if you don't have a path there anymore, then that's like you're not accessing mm-hmm. the pathway. Mm-hmm. So that's the key
yeah.
is to build the pathways again Absolutely. So that you can access the other pathways.
I know. When you think about it, you never forget anything. Everything you live in your life is permanently recorded.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
And sometimes my kids will say, don't you remember that? And I'm like, not really. And then I think, oh, wait, I do.
Yeah.
Right? Because it sort of triggered the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some pathway has led you there again.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Smells just will do that.
Totally.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's or a song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so in consumer behavior, they talk a lot about how memories are stored and information is stored. And one takeaway for me was, and this stat blew me away, how many decisions do we make in a day?
Oh, I don't even know. Probably 1,000.
30,000.
It's thought 30,000?
30,000. Like hundreds of them 30, on food 000? Alone in a day.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I was thinking I was way outside with 1,000.
30,000.
Because I would know about Barack Obama's decisions about what to wear in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Has
decision
been taken
fatigue.
Care of.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that he doesn't get decision fatigue.
Yes.
Wow. 30,000.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, when you can't decide what to make for dinner, it's because you're all decisioned out. So if you can make that in the morning, that's you're done, right?
Yeah.
So your brain's like a muscle. And if you don't wait till the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like you ever find the kids will say, what about this? What about? And I'll say, you know what? We'll talk about it in the morning.
Yeah.
Because I know my decision-making power is so much weaker.
Yeah.
And sometimes long council meetings, I think, you know, all this sitting here making decisions, we need to get up every hour and move around.
Yeah.
It, you know, at the end of a long public hearing, I don't know.
Wow.
Or I need to prepare myself before the long hearing so I have my thoughts organized.
Yeah. But then you still have to leave room for potential opinion change or, you know, because of facts or ideas that have come up. So, mm-hmm. It's kind of hard. You can't pre-make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
And so in some areas, faking it till you make it can be a compromise. Like, I don't know that I want my doctor to fake it until they make it, right? Especially at 4 o'clock in the morning at emergency.
Yes.
And I don't know that, you want counsel to be faking it till they make it after a long public hearing.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of those things, or a pilot. I don't know. Let's just try this and see if it works. And those kinds of industries, they have, you know, very formal standards. So as well as intuitive decision making, which is super important, there's also very formalized decision making.
Yes.
And so sometimes the intuitive types get so frustrated by the formalized types, but it's like, listen, dude, that's there for a reason.
Okay, but you know? We have to acknowledge mm-hmm. that there is room in those people's careers, the doctors and the pilots and the council people. There's room for that fake it till you make it mm-hmm. because all we're talking about is the confidence to be able to try, right?
Yes.
And so if they are never given that ability to say, I'm just going to wing it, I'm just going to try something new here, mm-hmm. then we wouldn't have innovation in medical.
Yeah, and it's called scientific discovery.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, but I mean, but they can't have decision fatigue.
Yeah,
that's
well, that's
not
true.
A good time
no,
to be winging
not
it.
A good time no. for decision fatigue.
No.
For doctors, no. And then and that's probably a factor in errors, right? Like at some point, you have to make a decision, and it's got to be a choice of taking a risk and winging it one way and doing it the old fashioned way. And they're probably stuck thinking, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Because they've had the, yeah, that mm-hmm. 30,000 decisions already that day. So I kind of get it that that would be a tough one.
Yeah. So,
tough to get risky and innovative at that time of the day.
And so there's basically three models. There's the rational model where you follow a set criteria. Mm-hmm. Then there's the bound, what's called bounded rationality, where I'm going to make this decision in light of what I know.
Okay.
Because there's no such thing as perfect information.
Okay. Right?
So we don't know what the weather's going to be tomorrow. We don't know what the Canadian dollar is going to be worth tomorrow. We're going to make those decisions based on what we know now.
Okay.
These are the boundaries, right?
Okay.
And then there's intuitive decision making.
Okay.
And intuitive isn't just your gut. It's also based on your experience, your training, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, because that's what intuition really is.
Yeah, it's based on how it makes you feel. So affect decision making is important.
Because I think experience is exactly what feeds your intuitive understanding of things, right? It's not that you're just like teenagers, right? It's not like you just arrived and say, oh, I know everything there is to know about garment industry.
Ta-da!
No, it's like if you've had that many years of experience, then somebody throws some question at you and you'd make an intuitive decision. It's just based on your experience.
Yes,
it's not because you actually had a channeling
experience,
from
knowledge,
spiritual sources.
Yeah, also your values and what your subconscious is telling you. So I find teenagers are very good at doing value and effective how it makes them feel and whether or not it conflicts with their values.
Mm.
So I like to talk to teenagers about, do you like this design? Do you like that design? Right? That's why they're such fashion mavens, like snowboarders and skateboarders, because they're making those design or those fashion decisions based on how it makes them feel.
Yeah.
And so that's where you get to the heart of, okay, if this can make a teenager feel awesome, there's something going on here.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas some of us who are a little bit in the older demographic, you know, we might make decisions based on what we wore when we were teenagers. So we're not keeping up to date.
Or based on how much it costs or how comfortable it is.
Yeah.
Or,
And sometimes, I mean, in fashion and other things, we get stuck in an old decade.
Yeah.
So it's hard to... It's difficult, sorry.
Like in the hair industry.
Totally.
That's a tough one when you know somebody who's had the same haircut since high school and you're 50.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I could hear Eric laughing from the other side over there.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will experience that.
So it's about how do you stay contemporary while still holding true to your own values.
Yeah. And your sense of self, like your sense, like, you know, a lot of people have their identity that they've just decided this is my identity and I'm going to hold on to it as best I can because it's what I know. And so maybe your hair and the way that you wear your clothes is part of that identity.
Totally.
So it's hard to break out of that.
So switch it up. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Right.
Try something new and just, you know, pretend you have the confidence to do it.
Yeah.
That's about it. We're talking about faking it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And now we're going to talk about the physiological reasons why this works, because there have been studies.
Mm-hmm.
Studies.
Yeah, and we make $30,000 decisions a day.
Yeah.
So we can't necessarily be analytical about every...
Yeah.
In fact, we can't. You would spontaneously combust.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things is the pose.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this one because I watched the TED Talks that Amy Cuddy did. She was a Harvard Business School psychologist, and she gave a brilliant TED Talk about... faking it till you make it. And in fact, her whole concept was, it's not faking it till you make it, fake it till you become it.
Oh,
yeah. And she was really talking about women in the workplace, right? And women achieving success in law and, you know, things like that. It was unbelievable. It changed the way I looked at confidence and the whole fake it till you make it concept. And it also changed my daughter, who I showed her the pose. I showed her the talk and we talk about this pose now. So it's the Wonder Woman pose.
Yes.
And what she found is that if you can adopt a powerful pose before an interview, before an important decision process, before a meeting, before something, you know, that you need confidence for, it physiologically changes you to have more confidence. So
you actually
get a decrease in cortisol, which is the stress hormone.
Yeah.
And an increase in testosterone, which is a confidence hormone. And, you know, it changes your chemical, makeup that gives you more confidence.
And changes how you make decisions.
Yes.
And if you're standing up straight, of course, your spine is straight. So the messages are going back and forth in between your brain and the rest of your body more easily. If you're, you know, slouched.
Yep. The slouchy, hunkered over.
It's hard to make decisions when you're slouched.
Gives you more stress hormones.
Yes.
And so that's another. Just consider that.
Take a deep breath.
Yeah. You know. So the Wonder Woman pose, do you remember?
Of course, I remember.
Yeah. So we're doing it.
Yeah.
So, you just have to think about that. Stand like that for 2 minutes or even sit like that for 2 minutes. The other one is if you're in a chair, you can't get out of your chair for whatever reason. It is hands behind your head and like so that your chest is kind of opened up.
Yes.
And your elbows are sticking out to your side. That's the other sort of sitting pose that's a power pose. So if you do that for 2 minutes before you go into any situation, you will nail that.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Or there's a greater likelihood that you'll nail it.
Yes.
Right? You don't want to. Yeah.
Well, I know. It's kind of hard to say that, but if you're not confident in your confidence building activity.
When you're walking, if you walk with your head down, you're missing things, right? Mm-hmm. So if even you make a conscious effort just to lift your chin up a little bit, then you're taking the world in, you know?
Yeah.
And your breathing is better. Your posture is better. It makes a big difference. Like just walk around the block with your head kind of down.
Yeah.
And then just pull your, and then just lift your head up slightly.
Yeah.
Especially your chin, and try it again.
Yeah.
Makes a huge.
Yeah.
Right? You can take deeper breaths. And it's all, the physiological piece is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the other one is
red blood cells. And you need to get that heart pumping.
And smile.
Mm-hmm.
The smile is way more powerful than we can imagine.
Did you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine last night?
No, oh. I don't get regular like on the day of TV. I always have to wait until it comes out on
smiling.
Netflix.
It's very really? Funny, yes.
Oh, crud. Yeah. Now I want to have to watch it. I want to buy the episode on iTunes now. So
No, you just wait. You can get it like tomorrow or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's true. You can get it on some streaming service.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So it turns out that there is like the muscles that are used to make a smile change the way that you perform. It actually changes your heart rate and lowers blood pressure and things like that.
And engages muscles, which calls on the blood supply, right?
It's yes.
Like it.
So there's actually like a study again in 2012 that was published in the Psychological Science Journal that was done on university students. They actually used chopsticks to force certain kinds of facial expressions.
Oh, wow.
Force them to hold expressions.
Yes.
And then they were given multitasking activities, like tracing a star with their non-dominant hand and, things like that. So what they found was that the ones with genuine smiles had lower heart rates and had actually an easier time, less stress, doing the task than the ones that had been forced with chopsticks to hold certain expressions.
Yeah.
So it didn't really matter what you looked like from the outside. It mattered that you were making the action of smiling.
From the inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's just, and then your eyebrow position, also same thing. Like if you raise your eyebrows, that changes you physiologically than furrowing your eyebrows.
I remember when we were cavemen and women, we didn't actually talk. We just grunted. So most of our language was nonverbal.
Yeah. Body language.
Yes.
Yes.
Very important.
Absolutely. So here's another one.
Okay.
Pretend you know the answer.
Okay.
Yeah. I know this is kind of interesting because you think, how can I pretend to know the answer if I don't know the answer?
Yeah.
But a study showed, this is a whole other different Quarterly Journal of Experimental Psychology. So what they found is that when they gave a whole set of questions to people and it was in front of a screen, to half the participants, they said, well, the answer is going to be flashed on the screen right before the question, but it's too fast for your conscious mind to know. So you won't think you know the answer, but your subconscious mind will know the answer.
Mm.
And then to the other half of the people, they said, there'll be a flash on the screen, but that's just to indicate the next question is coming up. So guess which group got the most right answers?
The one that pretended to know?
Yeah, the one that they were told that the answer was going to flash in front of them and it would be too fast to read, but their subconscious would get it.
Wow.
Turns out the flash was just a random set of letters and numbers.
But they got it anyway.
They got it anyway. Yeah. So if you think you know the answer, you're more likely to know the answer.
Absolutely.
So what the heck, right? Like how can you not benefit from going into a situation thinking, I'm probably going to know this. I think I got this.
Totally.
Right?
Or if I were so-and-so, how would I get this done?
Yeah. Well, that's another one.
So sometimes I think, like, if Mary Tyler Moore was in this situation, what would she do? Right? Or Murphy Brown or whatever.
Yeah,
pick a character. Alice in Wonderland. Mimic, what would they do?
Mimic good leaders is one of these things. So you're right on. If you're doing that thing where if you pick a leader that you admire and you admire their system.
Yeah, and it can be real, like actual or fictional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's why I think fiction's so important.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, in a way, it's just somebody you can relate to, mm-hmm. right? Like if it's in the job sector that you're in, you know, you have somebody that you admire. Maybe they wrote a bunch of books mm-hmm. or something like
that. What would Steve Jobs do?
Yeah, exactly.
We say that sometimes in our office. Yeah? What would Steve Jobs do? It's true.
Wow. Well, that must be kind of exciting, hey, because that makes you take more risks.
Yes.
Be more innovative.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's a very important part of faking it to make it. What, you know, mimic your good leaders. And then listening to happy music is, I know. It's genuinely important to not take yourself down with a heavy, low beat.
No.
Because it's true about your heartbeat and all of the, you know, sort of vibrations that happen within our bodies, that music will affect those vibrations. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as you're changing things up and making it not be soothing to your physiological processes, then it causes stress.
Mm-hmm. And that vibration piece is important.
Yeah, yes. It is. So choose happy music, things that actually make
you feel. Walking on sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not saying that you have to listen to that happy song all the time. What was that again? Feral. Oh,
yes.
Right? Yeah. Because I think everybody got a little bit tired of that one.
Yeah.
Dress for the job you want.
Yeah.
That is an important factor. Look, I'm already professional.
I know.
I'm wearing a business suit.
Get me. But not a pantsuit.
Oh, yeah, the pantsuit.
Anti-pantsuit.
Did you listen to, now I'm referencing the Mothership. I think it was This Is That about the kids, the high school kids dressing in suits to go to high school.
No.
Oh, my gosh. It was awesome. So funny. It was hilarious because the one mom that they were interviewing was saying, I don't know what to do. My daughter's dressing like Madeleine Albright going to the UN convention. It just makes me crazy. Like, is she trying to hurt me?
Oh, God.
I just want her to dye her hair green and pierce her nose.
Aw, like then normal.
Yeah. And then the kid's like, oh, mom, that's so gross.
It's hilarious. Didn't they have a pantsuit mob for Clinton?
Oh,
flash mob?
And oh, yes, that's right. I did hear about that. I didn't see that. That must be on the internet.
That's a power suit. That's, you know, whatever.
Well, you know, I mean, women have a unique, you know, situation to deal with there. Dressing like men mm-hmm. in order to be treated and accepted as equals, mm-hmm. or dressing like women, or dressing the way that they want to dress, and somehow making that work for the business environment,
it's
right?
True.
Like, what kind of, you know, it's just a really hard decision to make.
Oh, it's definitely you know, it's like tools in a toolkit wardrobe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you still don't want to show up for an interview in cargo pants.
No. You dress for where you want to be.
What? Yeah.
Yes.
Dress for exactly the environment you want to be in.
Yes.
Because that's kind of important. And that's something that I think I don't know what's happening, but it was brought up in my workplace a while ago about human rights violations, if you have a dress code and all this kind of thing. And I think, wow, we're getting serious about this human rights stuff. Mm-hmm. If we can't even decide that in a specific kind of sector, we are expected to dress a certain way, mm-hmm. but we don't want to trample on people's human rights to dress the way they want. But at the same time, certain areas, I mean, you get, it's like the branding thing, right?
Well,
the touchstones.
I see it more as a form of self-expression. I don't see it as a fitting in so much.
Yeah.
I think if you dress for the part that you want, you're sending a message. So maybe the part you want is green hair and a nose ring. That's okay.
Yeah.
Or I don't care about what you wear on your head. I don't care what color tights you wear. I don't care if you have tattoos. I care that you exhibit the confidence that you're the place you're trying to get to.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. But there's also,
I mean, to me, it's like,
find that
you know,
in the sector,
a clean t-shirt, you know, so I always say to my kids, really, your t-shirt has toothpaste on it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Well, I care.
Yeah.
Or they want to wear their pajamas to school. I'm like, no, we don't wear pajamas.
But as much as I want to be able to say that self-expression is the, you know, like is the important part,
mm-hmm.
we still get perception. Perception is still a part of it.
Oh, absolutely.
And when you're in a public industry, the public treats you as an employee mm-hmm. differently if you're not dressed according to, mm-hmm. you know, like your environment. So there's still some part to play there. I just think that you got to I think everybody needs to be a little bit clearer about how, I don't know, what am I saying? It's not about the branding. It's about everything that touches your sector kind of has a consistent look and feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to recognize. Mm-hmm. And yes, you can absolutely be expressive.
Well, I think it comes down to what your narrative is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you know the area you want to work in, you know the industry you want to work in, and you look at those people and what they're wearing, that would be something you can do mm-hmm. to make sure that you already are, you know, setting a direction for yourself.
Yes.
Is dressing for that yeah. sector.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which... So, doesn't necessarily mean a suit.
Not necessarily.
Saying, right?
No. Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely yeah. not. I just mean that...
There aren't a lot of suits in my business.
No.
No.
And there's not a lot of suits in Salmon Arm.
No, sometimes I'll see suits and I think, oh, bank manager from the coast.
Yeah.
yeah. Or somebody's going to apply for a mortgage.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Something.
It's true.
Big school board
meeting. We all
tell
stories. Everything tells stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess think about your environment. Think about what you want to achieve and then look around at the people yeah. around you and yeah. So it's like mimicking good leaders.
Totally.
Same thing.
But I'd like to bring up one quick point before we
okay.
go to the next break. But so one thing to be mindful of is whether we like to admit it or not, there are always biases and errors in some of our thinking.
Yeah.
Right? And so a couple of biases to keep in mind are overconfidence, right? So you want to check that. You might have what's called selective perception. So you're not willing to entertain another point of view.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes if you don't acknowledge your own bias, you can actually make terrible decisions. And it's totally avoidable. Other things are such as, I've put so much work into this, I'm not going to give up
now. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to be able to say, okay, yep. you know what? I tried, I'm pulling the pin and going on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Right?
There's wisdom in abandonment.
Yeah. Sunk costs or sunk time into a project. Mm-hmm. The other times is sometimes we trick ourselves into thinking that we're doing what's best for a group when really we're just serving ourselves.
Ah.
So it's true that humility and not knowing it all makes for better decision making.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, we want leaders who are confident, but on the other hand, we want leaders who are open to checking their biases.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really important conversation to have, mm-hmm. bias.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hearing it a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so whether you're at council, say you're at council and you're like, well, if I don't vote for this, these guys aren't going to vote for me next time. That's a self-serving bias, which might not actually lead to the best decision.
Well, exactly.
Not for you, not for them, not for the community at large.
Yeah.
So it's a very tricky mental game.
Yeah.
Oof. To be able to say, okay, wait. If I check my biases, so check your biases at the door.
Yeah.
And, right?
Yeah. And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, it happens that the dramatic moment is a fiber-related dramatic mm-hmm. moment, which is appropriate.
Yes, because there's a felt.
Yeah.
Felt collaborative.
Yes, the sculptural exhibition, five ladies who are felters have created sculptures of their own and sculptures that they did collaboratively. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's showing at the gallery now.
Yeah, now until October 28th
Lovely.
Or 29th, something like that. End of the month.
Right.
Yeah, and it's actually a warm, fuzzy show, except you can't touch anything. But we do have fuzzy felt in the lounge that you can touch if you want. Make your fuzzy felt thing. But yeah, warm, fuzzy feelings in October. That's
yes,
what we like.
Yes, mm-hmm. And so I'm sure everyone who listens to Artscape is aware of yarn bombing,
mm-hmm.
the global phenomena.
Yeah, our tree's been yarn bombed a few times at the gallery.
Well, move over, yarn bombers.
Because now,
here come the cross stitchers.
The cross stitchers are taking over.
So awesome. So in an urban setting especially, there's so much chain link, right?
Yes.
There's so much chicken wire.
Mm-hmm. Fencing is our thing in
yeah,
the city.
We like to, this is my domain.
Yeah,
right?
Territorial.
We're very territorial. So some cross-stitchers in Europe, and probably here too, have started cross-stitching fencing and chicken wire with wool.
Yeah.
And so you take this sort of ugly urban landscape, and suddenly there's like an English rose climbing up your
just like the
chain
old
link fence.
Grandma's cross-stitch.
Wonderful.
Right? I know.
And it's so beautiful to look at close up. Like, it's serious, like walking into a cross stitch or a Pitsy Point.
Yeah.
And what a great simple, smart way to deal with, because let's face it, chain link fencing is ugly.
Yeah.
And those slats that they put in to make it less ugly are almost uglier.
I know. Who thought of that?
I don't know, but
I think that's just a privacy thing. Again, I don't think it was to make it nice.
If we just faked it till we made it and thought, hey, what can we do to make this ugly chain link fence look awesome?
Yeah.
You know, it could be plants, like my chain link fence that I share with my neighbor. It's actually technically my neighbor's fence, but it's overrun with flowers and ivy, and it's beautiful now.
Yeah.
I hardly see it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, some people say that I didn't maintain it very well, but I'm okay with it. Nature has taken it over.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but I just love this idea of random public art. And now it's being used like in retail displays.
Oh,
giant
really?
Cross stitch.
Oh, wow.
Because you can cross stitch anything.
Yeah.
A logo, a name, a picture.
Yeah.
Like, just go fun. For it.
Yeah.
Right?
And you can make it any size.
And it's a ball of wool in a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. We're so sure that there's a decision that is more appropriate, that's too expensive, that's too hard to source. When really, if you just look and think, okay, if this was my job to fix, what would I do?
Mm.
Right? And you want to do it in a way that's meaningful and memorable and practical, right? Yeah. Those things can live together.
Yeah.
Some of the best ideas come from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then it's about...
Like, it doesn't always have Grandma to be an off-the-shelf. Yeah, what would Grandma do?
Yeah.
What would we have done in the Depression?
Yeah.
Right?
Before all the corporate everything, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. What would have been the practical, mm-hmm. down-to-earth thing to do with the neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's not leave it to the giant machine that is... Mm-hmm. The commercial world we live in. Let's go back to, okay, you know, let's MacGyver this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that that's a verb now.
I know. Except I hear the remake isn't very good, which is unfortunate.
There's a remake?
Yeah.
Oh.
But you don't get normal TV, so never mind.
Yeah.
I didn't say that.
Well, you know, that's just the rehash, right? The money-making thing. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing a quote. I think it was one of the Supernatural guys, the actors that do Supernatural, because that's been, like, going on to its 12th season now or something.
Yes.
And somebody said, are you guys ever going to stop? I mean, doesn't it seem like you've hit every storyline possible? And he said, we'll stop beating the dead horse when the horse stops spitting out money.
Ah, there we go. When the horse stops spitting out money. Anyway, you can see more about this cross-stitch street art on Bored Panda, of course.
Bored Panda art is awesome.
Go to, boy, I wish Bored Panda would sponsor Artscape.
Yeah.
They should,
because we use them a lot.
So much we free promo. Yeah.
So but, it's true. We are on the hunt for a new sponsor. And I think the only sad thing is we never did figure out who our anonymous sponsor was. And it was so awesome. It was such a great gift for that whole year. We had this anonymous sponsor who we worked so hard to figure out who it was.
Yes. And none of those dollars go to us directly. They all go here to support.
Yeah.
You know, believe it or not, it costs money to rent the space and heat a space.
Yeah, keep the lights
on. And keep the lights on and keep the phones working. And so community radio is a great fake it till you make it, right? This is where we test ideas. This is where we engage in challenging conversations. Mm-hmm. Conversations you might not be able to have on typical media sources. This is not about... judging other sources of media. It's just about that business model wouldn't necessarily allow for the community to, say, broadcast 2 hours of a candidate's debate.
Yeah.
Or, you know, recount stories of our First Nations. Mm-hmm. For this model to work, we need sponsorship.
Yeah.
And we need membership and we need actual dollars. So I know you and I have committed to sponsoring an hour of music, mm-hmm. and we're going to need a lot of hours of
a
music.
Lot of hours.
So,
but I think this is an awesome idea.
Yeah,
keep the music playing mm-hmm. is a way that you can sponsor an hour of radio and get what you want.
Sure.
Out of radio,
and you
which
can
is
sponsor
amazing.
In the name of your business. You can sponsor it in the name of your favorite. Maybe your grandma loved Johnny Cash. You know, whatever it is, just Sponsor it.
Yeah, $100 and you get a gift out of it. Because absolutely. You get a whole hour of radio mm-hmm. designed by you.
Yes.
And you even get to voice a message if you want.
Yeah.
Like you can send it as a birthday wish to somebody.
This one's for you, Grandma.
You can get on, yeah, and actually make your own message.
Yes.
So if you ever wanted to be on radio, mm-hmm. this could be your chance.
It's true. And the airwaves are weird, invisible things, but and they're so very important.
Yeah.
And without them, we wouldn't know what we know. And we wouldn't have the information we needed to make the decisions we need to make to fake it till we make it.
That's right.
There. And how's that for a...
It was a really big wrap-up. Good lassoing there.
There you go.
But really, it's kind of... It's all about the local thing too, right? Like keeping your neighborhoods informed and keeping us knowing each mm-hmm. other, keeping us connected. Mm-hmm. This is... Radio is one way to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's faceless because, you know, we could be dressed in our jammies mm-hmm. and nobody would know. Mm-hmm. But...
But we want to be radio hosts, so we dress
accordingly. So we dress like radio hosts. Yes. I got to check what I'm wearing. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. You're I'm not wearing a lab
radio
coat.
Host suitable.
Yeah.
A lab coat.
Nope. Not wearing a lab
not
coat.
Wearing a lab coat.
But if I wanted to be a scientist, I'd start wearing a lab coat.
I know, right? And the thing, I mean, so going back to the imposter thing, there are people like that movie, Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
With the dude.
Yeah, Tom Hanks
and
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Thank you. I mean, that guy had... It's based on a true story.
Yeah.
He faked being a pilot. He faked being a doctor. He faked being a lawyer. Right? So it's very powerful.
Yeah.
And so we always have to have that sort of two-part, you know, a little bit of faith in humanity, but a little bit of skepticism, too. We need to be... have a healthy level of both.
But it's like I said about the whole word fake, right? Like it's not really, it's not committing a crime, right?
No.
It's not that kind of level of fake. It's mostly just the confidence boosting actions.
Yes.
Because it turns out that when you pretend to be happy and you're smiling and you pretend to be confident because you've got a confident pose, it just turns out that that actually affects your body.
Yes.
And that you have less stress, more confidence, more blood flow
and
to your brain.
Act as if it could happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's what makes it positive. Mm-hmm. We're not saying go out and pretend to be a doctor and start surgerizing somebody.
No, please. Yeah. Those are the extreme examples.
Yes, yes. We're not condoning that at all.
No. Although I am a fan of Tom Hanks, but
yes,
he played the good guy.
But you know how many actors literally said, "Holy, like I don't even know how."
Well, that's
I got
what
here.
Acting is.
Yeah,
is faking it.
Exactly.
But they're professional fakers and well paid. So just think about how much money they make, right?
Yeah.
And next time you think, oh, I think I'm just going to wing this one.
Yeah. And then
you're in good company.
Yeah, that's right. And then they're saying like people who have anxiety and other forms of stress disorders, that acting turns out to be a really great way
to
overcoming a lot of that.
Yes.
Because you can just say, well, I'm just going to choose to be this confident person over here for
acting,
a little while. And they can get through a lot of parts of life just by being confident.
Yes.
Acting confident.
Yes.
So it's in the same kind of vein, right? It's a positive way of faking rather than a horrible
way
of faking.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we're all acting.
I suppose.
Yes.
Yeah.
As Shakespeare
Who
would say.
Who is
all
our
the world's a stage and we are merely players.
Yeah.
Well, something and portrayers. I don't know. Or maybe that's an Eagles song. I'm not sure. I think it was Shakespeare.
Shakespeare or Eagles. I don't know. I don't know. It's the same.
Yeah.
Right? Oh my gosh. Okay. Speaking of Shakespeare, because the plays are on the topic too.
Oh yeah.
So this fall, it just so happens I had the theater guests on a few weeks ago.
Yes.
It was really nice to talk to them about Mary Poppins. So it's kind of important to talk about that now, even though the show doesn't open till end of November. Tickets are being sold right now, and there's apparently one or two shows that are sold out already.
Wow.
Yeah. So get in there, get your tickets at Entwined Fiber Arts right quick here. I think you can also get them online. Mary Poppins is awesome, I think, because they've got, you know, some super talented local people that are just off the charts amazing.
So much talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sam and Arm, I don't know what it is about our air and our water. We make good people.
We love the theater.
Yeah. So get your Mary Poppins tickets soon. But there's always lots of other things going on. And at the gallery, we've got Surfacing, which is the Okanagan artists that are doing the fiber sculpture. And that's amazing. The artist talk is on October 20th. The treat trail is on Halloween downtown, and unfortunately we can't have a haunted gallery this year because the trolls in the basement are having their own party.
Oh
yeah. So we have to keep everybody out.
Fair enough.
All the humans have to be out. So, yeah, so that's what's happening for October. And then we've got the 150 voices going on. Yes. This is really critical. If you know anybody out there, or if anybody out there is between 15 and 21, or even if you're 14 and going to be 15 very soon, you are probably going to be interested in this video project. It is animation, stop motion and classical, and interviews with Salmon Arm residents. And we're making a movie that's going to be a legacy for Salmon Arm in Canada's 150th year.
And you don't have to be 15 to 21 to be interviewed.
No, that's right. All people will be interviewed, but the workers, the people who are doing the content. Yes.
Oh,
will
what a
be
project.
Youth.
Yeah. Wonderful.
We had our first workshop for tech and interview skills last night.
And?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. Except that they know way more than you think they know.
Right?
You think
how do they know so much?
You think
so
they're imparting knowledge and they're like, we know that.
Yeah, what ifs. Yeah. But they do know so much because they absorb so much.
Yes.
And it's scary to think. Right?
I know.
When they know more than you do. You're like, wait a minute, how did that happen?
The whole digital field, though, like that's the thing, right? I say, okay, and then you do this. And one kid's like, actually, all phones do that.
Oh, I hope that wasn't my kid.
No, I could totally
see him saying, hello.
But anyway, But it's a youth-led project. Like, I'm only doing these early stages because the kids that are getting involved now are going to be kind of leading the kids later on. Mm-hmm. And then the animation workshops are being done by local professionals. I mean, and they're free to kids. It's fantastic.
No, it's a great
But we also
set.
Are looking for executive producers.
Oh, yes.
So people who want to invest in this whole project.
Yes, your name and lights.
Yes. And it's kind of a fun project to support because your name will be in the credits as executive producer. I mean, how often does
I want to be an executive producer.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, it's hardly any money. It's only $1,500 to be an executive producer.
Okay, me and some of my friends could be an executive
That's
producer.
That's true. Or you could just sponsor.
No, absolutely. There's
lots of sponsorships.
And the money will... will come.
This is big Canada 150 stuff. This is our big project.
Yes.
And it'll be a film.
What a legacy.
Yeah. It'll be a film that shows at our youth exhibition on April 29th, I think it is, or 30th, something like that, end of April. And then it's going to show at other other things around town, right? So I think that'll be great. Okay.
Cool.
That's it, man. Check our website, salmonarmartcenter.ca, on the participate page for upcoming events.
And just get out there and do it.
Yeah.
Fake it till you make it.
See you next time.
Bye now.